Hello, everyone, and welcome to the official Lost audio podcast hosted by ABC.com. Well, by now, everyone has met Kevin Johnson, a.k.a. Michael. And if you didn't, you can, of course, find that episode at ABC.com. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have. In any case, we are at the end of our first pod of episodes for Season 4, but we are not done with our podcasts for Season 4 by a long shot. In fact, during our upcoming break here, remember Lost returns on April 24th, we're going to have a special edition of the official Lost video podcast on April 18th. And we are asking you all to submit your fan questions, not on the normal boards, though. Because this is video, we've set up a special blogcast to collect your questions. Here's how it works. If you are over 18 and have the ability to video conference using iChat or AOL IM, you can submit the text of your questions along with your contact information at our special blogcast on ABC.com that will go live by April 4th. Again, the site's not live just yet, but it will be by April 4th. So just stay tuned to lost.abc.com for more info. We will pull our questions from this pool, and a few of you will be contacted to record video of those questions via iChat to be answered by Damon and Carlton directly in our upcoming video podcast. Sound confusing? It's okay. Just play this back. It's a podcast. Just rewind it. In the meantime, though, we have executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse here today to rehash Meet Kevin Johnson. They'll also talk about the Oceanic Six, as well as what the term is for this year's Rattlesnake in the Mailbox. More on that in a bit. And, of course, they'll take your fan questions. So, after that long-winded introduction, here now are Damon and Carlton.
Buenos dias, Damon.
Hola.
This is a special podcast coming to you from Mexico.
No, it isn't. It's coming from my office, which smells like
Mexico
right now for reasons that we won't discuss. We're on a donkey kick right now.
That's true. Exactly.
I guess we might be able to actually reveal something in this podcast by the end of it.
Oh, know? Yeah. We but will tell you the new name for the secret ending of the fourth season finale.
Right. That's last year. It was the Rattlesnake in the Mailbox.
Well, first of all, back up. I mean, for those who don't know, we always have a code name for the sort of end of the show, and we only distribute those pages to the most minimal number of people involved, usually the director, the actors, just because, you know, obviously we're trying to keep spoilers from getting out there, and we don't want the ending of the finales spoiled. So we, as opposed to telling people what they are, we sort of give them a code name, and then the actual material is disseminated on a need-to-know basis.
The first year was the bagel. The second year was the challah. And then we were like, everybody thinks we're going to go with Judaic bread products. Let's change it up. And Carlton went with the Rattlesnake in the Mailbox because...
because I was driving home one night and I thought, wow, you know, I was getting my mail and somebody was like, Jesus, what if somebody put a rattlesnake in somebody's mailbox? That would be really scary. I don't know why I thought that, but it's those very skills that probably served me well in this job.
And then when Carlton shared that with the rest of us, we all were very frightened and basically, you know, said, well, nobody expects a rattlesnake in the mailbox, and became an inside joke and also the perfect name, code name for Jack and Kate on the tarmac, because nobody would hopefully see it coming.
Right. It would be the proverbial rattlesnake in the mailbox, right. The sudden appearance of flash forwards on Lost.
Yes, exactly.
So let's not tell them now. Let's wait till
the
end.
Yeah, we'll wait until the end. But anyway.
Okay. That'll force people to listen to this whole podcast.
We gave you like a little teaser. That's exciting.
Exactly.
And in the case of that, though, it's not the last scene in the show that has that code name. It's actually a scene that happens towards the end of the show but reveals a very significant secret. This isn't going to be one of those, not to get your hopes up for the final scene of the finale, you know, which will be cool, but it isn't one of those jaw-dropping, up is down, everything that's right is left craziness. But we do have a code phrase, and that's what matters.
Exactly. So let's rehash a little bit on episode 408, Meet Kevin Johnson. And I see that Chris White has done some redrafting here of his talking points this week to better suit my particular form of eloquation.
Yes, in other words, so, he uses very small words and has increased the type size.
So, Daemon, pray tell, my liege, who indeed are the Oceanic Six?
Wow, I like that you, I like the knight speak. Yeah, let's talk about the Oceanic Six, because let's open up the door for all the podcast listeners, because this is sort of a fascinating study in when to keep your trap shut. We, on the podcast, basically said that by the end of the seventh episode, you, the audience, will know who the Oceanic Six are.
Right, but we didn't mean to imply that we were going to keep that information for dissemination on the next podcast.
Correct. So, fire alarm.
Fire alarm.
We've got to evacuate.
Well, that's why we're, you know.
We'll take a blood.
Well, you know what? I'm telling you, that's what we should not have come to Mexico. All right. We're back from the fire alarm. I wrapped Daemon in a blanket, and he's now no longer on fire. The spontaneous combustion thing has been a problem the last couple of weeks, but I think we've got it under control.
We were talking about the Oceanic Six.
Just to reset, so we were basically sitting here before the podcast this morning. We were having breakfast and talking about the show, as we do every day, and we were saying, well, what are we going to say about the Oceanic Six? Because, you know, there's always this issue of, you know, we're very loath to sort of put out critical information in something other than the show, because we don't want people who are watching the show to feel like, oh, now I have to listen to the podcast, too, in order to know what's going on in Lost. That would be kind of a disaster.
Right, and the conundrum is one that we generated ourselves as a result of saying on a podcast, by the end of the seventh episode, you will know who the Oceanic Six are. So now we're in a catch-22, because we promised that you would know, but we did not anticipate that people would still not know, because they always think we're up to shenanigans.
Right. And so we decided, well, we would just basically say, we're not up to shenanigans. You've seen Jin's gravestone. You've seen all the Oceanic Six on screen. You should be able to deduce who they are. And then we were going to say, but yes, in the show, at some point downstream, there is a scene in which you see all the Oceanic Six together. And so you'll get that confirmation.
It will be confirmed for you. Because essentially, going into the seventh episode, we did not want to confirm all the members of the Oceanic Six, because then you would have seen Jin and Sun, and you would have went, well, that would make Oceanic Seven, so the math is all wrong. So basically, we wanted you to go into the seventh episode, and when you saw that you were doing dual flash forwards with Sun and Jin, if you didn't think we confirmed all the members of the Oceanic Six, you'd be able to enjoy that episode thinking you were seeing dual flash forwards. And at the end of it, when we revealed that Jin was dead, and you saw on his gravestone that his date of death was the 22nd of September 2004, which was the day of the crash, you would say, oh, okay, now I know who all the members of the Oceanic Six are. But people did not make that deduction.
Or there was a lot of speculation that we were going to somehow, Sawyer would pop up in an episode and he'd be one of the Oceanic Six, or Ben was one of the Oceanic Six, or did the baby count or not count? So anyway, so then all of a sudden, I get this email from the promotional department over at ABC, basically with the teaser that they were going to put on the end of episode 8.
Which you've already seen.
Which you've seen. And that had basically the identities of all the Oceanic Six in it.
It was like, now we've confirmed the identities of the Oceanic Six. And it shows all of them.
So
that's it.
That's it.
There
now
you
know. They've done our job for us. And so what else should we rehash, David? You want to talk about Mr. Friendly being gay.
We have long alluded to the fact that there was a gay character on the show Lost, but that their sexual preferences was their own business. But we alluded to it in the season premiere of the third season, where Kate is changing in the locker room and Friendly says that she's not his type. And people say, what does he mean by that? And now you know.
Do you think that scene in the hotel room made it clear that he was gay?
It was not subtle, to say the least. But again, we think that, in all honesty, that that's actually very cool, because he is played by MC Gainey, who's an awesome actor, and we really miss on the show. It's so great to see him back recruiting Michael last week. You know, we felt we owed the audience, yes, it is him, and let's be a little more definitive about it. And
right. I think I'll play some banjo music now.
Why don't you?
Okay, and then we'll move into questions.
Excellent, okay.
All right. I think we're ready for questions, aren't you? Or do you want to? We don't want to be pre-hashing the episode coming up. It's so far away. We'll
probably
do some other podcast before then, and we'll talk about The Shape of Things to Come, which is episode 409, which will be the first one back.
Daemon and Carlton, this is from Tom Atris. Minkowski and Desmond have experienced side effects from leaving or coming to the island, but none of the Oceanic A-15 survivors had the same side effect. Also, when Desmond took off on a sailboat, shouldn't he have incurred the illness then? Does the illness only take when leaving the island, or did the Pearl Station protect those coming and going, but not now, since it imploded? I think they mean the Swan Station.
Swan Station.
I trust that you have an explanation that will keep a coherent storyline. By the way, I love every minute of the season, Tom.
Wow, very nice. Thank you, Tom. Well, we think we have a coherent explanation, not all of which we probably want to detail here, but I think there's a difference between whether you're sort of inside the realm of the island or you're outside the realm. The freighter is outside the realm right now. Desmond perhaps never sailed outside the realm of the island.
He was just going in circles, apparently.
And the bearing, you know, he didn't have a bearing. Those bearings are very specific. Ben makes it very clear that when Michael leaves the island, that he has to stay right on this bearing. When Lapidus is flying the helicopter, it's, you know, Faraday makes it very clear. He's got to stay right on that bearing. So I think it's fair to say it's, you know, it's like a spacecraft entering the Earth's atmosphere. If you,
I like that word.
If you enter the atmosphere at too steep an angle, you'll burn up. If you enter at too shallow an angle, you'll bounce off and back into space. And I think that that analogy is a good one for how you have to get on or off the island. And Desmond also experienced a fairly intense electromagnetic event when he turned the failsafe key, which might make him susceptible to certain effects that other people might not be made susceptible to.
It's interesting that that Tom uses the phrasing, shouldn't he have incurred the illness then, to use that particular phrasing
right.
in the question. I find it illness, another word for illness might be sickness.
Yeah.
And I've heard that word on the show before.
That's right. So this may be an effect that's actually happened over a long period of time on the island.
Interesting.
Okay. All right, Damon, you ready?
Yeah, please, shoot.
This is under the heading, Miles Lockjaw, Did He Pull an Arts? And it's from...
Wow.
Darlton is my constant.
Wow.
Darlton, Johnny, Ryan, and Mike here from Futuretronics, avoiding our jobs, theorizing about what's happening throughout season 4. Question, what's up with Miles? He's been sitting in that cabin with a grenade in his mouth for something like 4 days. Is it even possible for a man to bite down on a grenade for 4 days straight? Does Locke allow him to discharge his bowels properly, or does he need a new pair of pants?
Wow.
Speaking of which, is Carlton wearing pants? Are we supposed to assume that Locke has taken the grenade out of his mouth, or is it still there?
Wow. Well, now you've seen Meet Kevin Johnson, and you see that Miles is, in fact, both non-lockjawed perfectly well, and there has not been a...
Lockjawed, that's
yeah,
good.
There has not been a discharge of either the grenade or his bowels. I just think you saw that question, you saw discharge your bowels, the word pantsless. Like the Terminator, you know, when he sees things and he's like selecting, what should I say? You just zeroed in on those words.
Exactly.
And then asked the question, so...
And I am wearing pants right now.
That's
because
good.
We're in Mexico.
Next question, Carlton.
Yes.
This is from JJ Cool Lost. Oh, JJ Cool Lost. I was just wondering if we were ever going to get the chance to see what happened to the hatch immediately after Desmond turned the failsafe key. It's been bugging me that we never got to see how Locke, Echo, and Desmond ended up outside of the hatch. Also, is the electrical storm that caused Desmond to time travel temporary, or is it always there? Thanks. Look forward to the final run of episodes this season. JJ.
Oh, JJ, nice of you to write in.
It's nice.
It
seems
good.
A little confused.
Wow. He's been very busy doing Star Trek, so
that's
I can understand
sure.
that he probably...
JJ, you can call us on the phone. You don't need to submit questions in the podcast.
The truth is we probably are not going to go back and replay any more details about the Swan imploding. But somehow during that implosion, our hero characters were sort of cast out from the Swan.
We know what happened to Desmond.
Yeah.
What happened to Locke and Echo is... you know, as anyone's guess, they both suffered temporary side effects themselves.
Right.
But you probably haven't seen your last purple sky.
No, you definitely haven't seen your last purple sky. And basically, yes, there are other electromagnetic events that happen periodically. And we have another electromagnetic event coming up on the show this year. I bet there's no one on another show who's basically teasing the future of their show by saying, hey, we have a big electromagnetic event coming up. That's not going to happen on Chuck.
Maybe on Numbers.
Hello, Damon E. Carlton. I have a question to beat you.
She knows we're in Mexico.
It's from K Blue Linus Monster Forms. Basically, This person wants to know if you will comment on what the significance is of these certain things that we've seen on the show, whether they're, you know, the monster takes, whether they're the monster, whether they're humans, animals, apparitions, what exactly they are.
So you're going to say the name, and I say monster, apparition, or
human, or dead, human. Whatever, okay. Whatever its significance.
Okay? Just so word association.
Word association.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Ben's mother, Emily.
Apparition.
The wild boar of Sawyer.
Animal.
Spider that paralyzed Nikki.
Monster.
Bird of Hurley.
Oh, I'm not going to comment on that.
Dave.
Figment of imagination / apparition.
Okay. Yemi.
Monster.
Saeed Mikhail's cat, Nadia.
Wait.
The cat.
The cat.
The cat was named Nadia.
Oh, animal. And coincidence.
Walt.
Walt, the person, is a person. But there are apparitions of Walt that may not be Walt. And also monster related.
Excellent. Boone.
Boone, monster. No. He's just
that
Boone.
Person. He's
oh,
Boone.
You mean when he appears in Locke's dream?
Well, he's just, he's in a dream.
Dream.
He's dream.
Yes, he's dream. It's an outside category.
Jack.
Jack is an apparition. That's going to be the big twist at the end of this season. He's not only in the future, but he's not real.
He's making a joke.
Yes.
Kate's Horace.
We have this is actually a funny story. We have this board in the room with all
the
in the writer's room with all the actors who are on the show, like all the Oceanic A15ers, but then all the sort of recurs like Penny Widmore and Charles Widmore, and
we have their headshots, you know, so we can keep track of who we have on the show.
And Matthew Abaddon and basically Sawyer. Yeah, so everybody, they go into a door that says deceased. Once they die, we move them over there. And then there's a door that says undead.
Yeah.
And on the undead door, there's only three pictures. One of them is
Christian Shepherd.
One of them is Christian Shepherd. One of them is Yemi. And the other one is
Kate's
horse. Just a picture of a horse.
So Kate's horse is
undead.
Okay. Thank you. That was good. Very well done.
This is from The Zebra Killer.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how you get that nickname, but I hope it's not from killing zebras. Hey, what up, Dame? What up, C? Shortly after season 4 started, I bought season 3 on Blu-ray and rewatched every single episode just to enjoy the full uncompressed 1080p HD experience, which is awesome, by the way. And because it was so high definition, I couldn't help but notice something rather curious. In the episode Exposé, which centered on my favorite character, Paolo, and my second favorite character, Nikki.
Wow.
Hurley finds a script for the Exposé TV show, and under the credits, it lists Rick Lapidus as one of the stars. So my question is Rick Lapidus actually a significant part of the Lost mythology, or do you guys just really like the surname Lapidus? Because it is fun to say. Lapidus.
That is the greatest question ever.
I think
ever.
It is one of the greatest questions ever.
Oh, my God. Pulling back the curtain a bit.
Eddie Kitsis,
who is one of our writers on the show, is in love with the name Lapidus.
And he has been trying to get the name Lapidus into the show for a very long time.
And so his first stab was to write. He mocked up the title page for Exposé. Eddie is a huge Exposé fan.
Eddie and Adam Horowitz wrote the Exposé episode.
Yeah, they wrote that episode. And so he got Rick Lapidus on the title page. But then, was that enough, Damon?
No.
No, it was not enough. So he basically, when we were coming up with the idea of the chopper pilot, and Eddie was like, he must be named Lapidus.
Frank Lapidus.
Frank Lapidus.
It was fully baked at that point.
It evolved from Lapidus to Frank Lapidus.
And he would not be denied.
Rick was like an early sketch. It's like if you see like a Cezanne, you see like a working drawing, and then you see a final painting.
He would not be denied.
Okay, Damon. Is Aaron in danger from I Don't Like Locke?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that wasn't the question?
Well, it is, but okay. I'll go ahead and read the question anyway. Right. Hey, DNC. My friend Sophie and I were discussing Eggtown recently, which is just a great visual anyway.
Absolutely.
And she brought up a very good point, which I've been thinking about for a while now.
Oh, Sophie.
This is I Don't Like Locke and Sophie were chatting.
No, yeah, but she says Sophie's the one who brought up the point.
Yes,
so I went,
sure.
Oh, leave it to Sophie to ruin a conversation about Eggtown.
Is Aaron in danger now that he's being raised by Kate? In season 1, episode 10, raised by another psychic, Richard Malkin tells Claire the danger surrounds the baby and Claire must raise it herself. And then, does this mean that Kate and others around him will be in danger? Maybe somehow Jack knows this, which is why he doesn't want to see him.
Well, here's the answer to that question, Carlton. Richard Malkin, who is the psychic, he did say that in season 1, but we saw Richard Malkin again in season 2 when Mr. Echo went to go see him and we realized that he is not, at least claiming to not be anything more than a con man himself in terms of his psychic activities. So if you believe that he's a psychic, then yes, the baby is in danger for psychic reasons. And if you believe he is a con man, then the baby is perfectly fine under Kate's supervision.
But you did say Aaron was in danger.
Yeah, he is in danger. Okay. Because Kate is a murderer who blows up houses. And I just don't think, you know, the men in her life, I think that she's got a bad track record. And if I were Aaron,
I'd get just out of there. Like, as soon as I could walk, you know, I would beat feet.
Yeah.
All right, two more questions? Mm. All right, I'm going to ask you a quick one, and then I'm going to ask you a longer one.
Okay.
Now we know that Michael is on the ship under the alias Kevin Johnson. What was the reason for choosing Kevin Johnson? Was it to honor the famous Phoenix Suns point guard of the same name?
No.
I think the problem is that the others just didn't really know enough about the NBA, and when they gave Michael the alias, they just weren't that familiar with NBA players.
I think it's more a matter of that the others, if they had chosen, like, Darwin or, you know, Dickens, then, you know, Widmore would have gotten suspicious. He'd go, like, oh, now there's somebody on my boat with a literary allusion in their name, which sounds very much like that's a Benjamin Linus alias. So they picked the most innocuous name they possibly could, which was Kevin Johnson.
All right, last question.
Thank God.
Here we go.
Unless this is the last question for 5 weeks, Carlton.
No, we're going to come back and do something else.
We'll come back.
Chris is like, no way, no, I'm doing another podcast. No, he's got video questions.
We'll come back. Okay.
Oh, it'll be fun.
I'm sick of us.
Speak for yourself.
Right now, hundreds of people are nodding along with me.
We have to get through this question, and then we have to answer, of course, the big tease, which is what is the rattlesnake in the mailbox for season 4. Okay, so cultural anthropologist, archaeologist. Oh, and something about the Black Rock from D. Karina H. I was wondering about Charlotte. As Ben said, she received a PhD in cultural anthropology from Oxford, but in episode 402, Confirmed Dead, we see her excavating a polar bear in Tunisia. Now, as I'm sure you know, Damon, excavation is normally done by an archaeologist, and though archaeology can be seen as a subfield of anthropology, it is separate from cultural anthropology. In fact, you may be unaware that there is a nerdy interdisciplinary feud between the two subfields. I can say it's nerdy because I have a degree in archaeology, and I was just wondering if she was indeed a cultural anthropologist, or maybe perhaps both a cultural anthropologist and an archaeologist. But for a more relevant question, I was wondering if we'd ever see a flashback involving the Black Rock or the four-toed statue.
Oh, I'll answer the last part first, which is you will learn more about the Black Rock and the four-toed statue, but that's not to say that there will be a flashback.
Four-toed statue?
Four-toed statue.
There you go.
And in addition to that, I never first off realized that there was this whole sort of sharks and jets, you know, rivalry between cultural anthropologists and archaeologists, but I understand how the bad blood exists between them. If I'm a cultural anthropologist, Raiders of the Lost Ark pretty much completely ruined my life. Because if you're an archaeologist and you're at a party and you're like, before, like, you know, 1981 when that movie came out, you're like, I'm an archaeologist, and people are like, oh, I don't even want to talk to you. Let me go find someone who plays sports. But after Indiana Jones came out, people were like, ooh, you know, what do you do? Do you have a whip? Do you fly planes? Do you like snakes? But if you're a cultural anthropologist, it never changed for you. All you ever get is you're at a party, you say, I'm a cultural anthropologist. People go, oh, is that like an archaeologist? And that's bad news if you're a cultural anthropologist. So, you know, I think it's safe to say that Charlotte is a cultural anthropologist who has always been a closet archaeologist. So when she can break out her little brushes and go digging around in Tunisia, she embraces it, although that's not what her degree is in.
Right, but the fact that she's a cultural anthropologist...
A what now?
A cultural anthropologist is... That is meaningful.
Yeah, those are people who, like, study civilizations
and
ancient cultures.
Yeah.
Ancient cultures.
All right, so let's just wrap this up. Damon... I'm going to play a little banjo, and then I'm going to ask you the big question, and I'm going to let you do the reveal here, okay? Damon, what is the secret code name for the secret scene at the end of season 4?
The secret scene at the end of season 4 is referred to internally and code phrased by us, the writers, the only ones who are aware of the content of that scene, as the frozen donkey wheel.
He's not joking. That's what it is.
Chris White is hearing
the frozen donkey wheel.
Chris White is hearing this for the first time. You can only imagine the shock on his face.
He's running over to ABC and they're canceling the show.
Could it possibly be? But that is no joke, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first.
The frozen donkey wheel.
The frozen donkey wheel.
Okay.
Sounds
well,
like a dirty ice cream freeze.
What? Dirty ice cream.
A dirty ice cream.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that we're in Mexico. Okay. Yes. All right then. Adios, Damon.
Adios, Carlton.
Hasta luego.
See ya.
That's it for this edition of the audio podcast. Again, stay tuned to lost.abc.com for your chance to submit a question in our next official Lost video podcast. And, of course, Lost returns to ABC on April 24th at its new time, 10:01 p.m., with the episode The Shape of Things to Come.